You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 7 June. NVIDIA splits 10-for-1 after the U.S. close tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. I want to get his take on commodities. I mean, which is he bullish on, bearish on, just watching? Is it diversifieds or singles? We're going to be talking cash from Absa, benefits and risks of cash as we move towards a cashless society, and some thoughts for me on buying falling shares. Why not wait for a recovery first? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Rental growth slump in Q1, the biggest since the pandemic, dropped 0.8% as interest rates stayed higher for longer. Business Day, Cape Town is worst port on global list of the World Bank. World Bank illustrates South Africa's dire performance, but sub-Saharan Africa as a whole improves. Morning markets, the US was slightly red. S&P down 0.02%, NASDAQ down 0.07%. Over in the east, it's all red. Sydney off 0.1%, as is Tokyo. Hong Kong down 0.5%, and Tencent off 1.5%. Commodities mostly green. Gold, 2,397. Brent, 79.88. Platinum, 1,011. And the red on the list is palladium, 934. Rand is 18.94. Bitcoin, 70,900. And top 40 opening call, we're looking for a one point green open. Call that going nowhere.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson. He, of course, from Rand Swiss. Gary, appreciate the early morning. Commodities, we have the years of chatted about it. We've got a space now. Gold looking good. Copper looking good. Oil under the cosh. PGMs. I mean, maybe there's some green shoots, but you've got to kind of squint to see them. What are you looking for in the commodity space? Is there anything that's interesting you? Anything that's really, really bothering you?
Well, I think maybe let's take a step back before we drill into the individual commodities. I think, you know, the decision between investing in commodities and not investing in commodities, for us, I think it's an important diversifying factor in any portfolio. And if you look at the JSE, we have amazing commodity companies. We are spoiled for choice when it comes to commodity companies. It's really, you know, the likes of Rio Tinto, Vale, you know, that we don't have, but we pretty much have just about everything else. So yes, definitely, we believe that you should have exposure to commodities, and mainly because they, even though they are very cyclical, they do reduce risk in a portfolio. Overall, you should see a smooth return because they tend to be non-correlated with the rest of the market. Often the commodity cycle is outside the general market cycles.
Yeah.
Now, the benefits, of course, they provide a great inflation hedge. And as we know, inflation is pretty high. We're expecting it to come down. But I think a lot of that is already being reflected in the pricing of some of the commodity stocks. And then there's the question, maybe inflation doesn't come down as quickly as we think it's going to come down. And then you might see an uplift. So definitely in general, I would say you're having a commodity component in a portfolio at this stage is important. But yeah, down to picking individual commodities. As you said, I think the exciting ones at the moment, definitely copper. Yeah. You know, you're looking at the electrification of the grid. Copper is used in solar panels. You know, it's more of a green metal. We're also potentially looking at interest rate cuts this year that should boost global growth. And then you want copper, absolutely. So, you know, but for our money, I think, I mean, we're kind of following almost the same view as Billiton, at least BHP was following when they were trying to buy Anglo American. We want those copper assets as well. And I think BHP is probably the preferred diversified at the moment, certainly in our portfolios. We've seen a lift after, obviously, they stepped away from that Anglo deal. We actually had an uplift in our fair value on the stock because I think they were going to pay maybe a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. So now that they've kind of, you know, obviously there's the put up or shut up rule, so they've had to walk away for 6 months now. We think that's a good thing. Let's go back to the drawing board, see what happens at Anglo American, but for now, happy holders of BHP.
And I mean, the BHP, the diversifieds, they offer you, and diversifieds are more niche these days than they were perhaps 10 years ago. I mean, BHP's got out of energy, Anglo American has exited gold and their coal assets, but rather than a sort of single commodity which adds some volatility to it. And of course, we do have some single copper plays in the market, but they're very, very small. But the diversified over the singles, because just to sort of smooth it out a bit.
A little bit, yes. And also, I think, you know, you're also relying on them to make those decisions for you to an extent, to go and seek out the assets and the commodities that you think are going to do well. Now another interesting component, you know, of BHP's portfolio is the Jansen Potash project that they're doing in Saskatchewan in Canada. So if the listeners are not familiar with potash, it's absolutely critical in fertilizer production and by extension in food security. Now, if you look at kind of demographic trends, they're talking about a planet that needs to support almost 10 billion people by 2050. You can't do that without fertilizer. And, you know, following the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine, we've actually seen potash production reduced. So you can see that it's a key commodity. Now, it's obviously not important in the revenue line for BHP at the moment, but that project will be it's one of the largest potash mine production facilities in the world when it's completed. So also, we like that aspect of it. Iron ore, I'm a little bit more concerned about. You obviously, whenever you talk about commodities, you have to talk about China, and we can see that China is slowing down. You know, they're already reached their peak working age population. There are demographic problems in China. At the moment, BHP's revenue probably is around 60% made up by Chinese customers. So it is an incredibly important component to the business as well. But also, if you look at their iron ore mines compared to many of the other mines, at the other iron ore plays, they do have a cost advantage. They're typically a lot lower cost, and also they've got specifically to the customers in China, they've got a travel advantage. So remember, iron ore is not like gold. You can't stick it on a plane and fly it somewhere. There's a significant cost to transporting it long distances, which adds to your all-in cost. Now, that for someone like Vale or someone operating in South America, even Kumba operating in South Africa, if you need to ship that all the way to China, BHP just has that slight advantage because so many of their mines are in Australia. But overall, we like that one. We also obviously like Glencore as well, also like quite a pure play. If you're looking for more pure plays, though, I mean, Sibanye is also something that you can talk about. You obviously mentioned at the top of the show, PGMs maybe falling out of favor with investors, obviously with the move to EVs. Longer term, it's difficult to see what is going to replace the auto catalytic converter demand. But I think it's almost the same story as oil at this stage. And every time a great report to go read is the Johnson Matthey report. The last one was released in May, and you can see that we almost perpetually underestimating how fast these battery electric vehicles are going to be rolled out, and we're almost continually surprising in terms of the amount of PGMs that we require, and for that reason you have seen the PGM prices supported to an extent. So it's almost that we can see what's coming, but the reality doesn't match kind of the expectations as quickly as people think, and that's why I think there is probably still an argument to be made for holding some PGMs in portfolios.
And I really like your point that you kind of get BHP and they kind of manage your commodity exposure for you. They're working in your behalf. That's the core of investing. We'll leave it there. Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss, always appreciate the early morning insights.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence, but what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Nkanhla Mkletsha, Executive Cash at Absa. Nkanhla, appreciate the time today. Cash in the South African economy, it remains king. Maybe it's not king anymore, but it is still an important part of the economy. I mean, it's a high-ranking prince, if you want to stay with the poor analogy, and it plays a very large role.
Certainly, still plays a critical role in our society, definitely. I would say it's still king.
You'd say it's still king. I mean, and I'm thinking, you know, we've got the rise of digital. I mean, most recently, we've got PayShap that came to the party in South Africa. We've got all the fintech and the like. But there is still a large component of the South African consumer who is using cash.
Definitely. I mean, the South African consumer that we talk about is different group of LSMs, depending on where they are in our country as well. Access to these kind of digital solutions that you're referring to is a big component of that as well.
That's a great point. Your LSM 10 living in a penthouse in Clifton probably hasn't seen cash in an age, but someone living in a rural area, it's probably exclusively cash.
Rural, or I would even say township economies, we're seeing a lot of cash in those kinds of environments, which are not very far from where we are. If you look at your Sandton city, cross the road into Alex, seeing a lot of that kind of cash volume playing a role in those environments.
Yeah, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking taxi operators, they are a cash economy, probably 100% of it. Cash, however, it's expensive and it's risky. I'm thinking cash and transit heists. It is a, I don't want to say a burden perhaps, but certainly a cost for banks, a cost for retailers.
It's definitely a cost for banks, retailers, but as well as all the other players in the value chain. If you think about the actual providers of the CIT and a high risk to even manage and move around. I think for me, when you talk about digital and the way we have approached it from a banking perspective is we see these two worlds actually converging because we actually need digital to accelerate so that we can drive some of these solutions around the risk of moving cash around and giving access to these digital solutions to people that are using cash so that we can actually drive the usage of cash to, I'll say, a limited extent, drive it down.
That's what you're saying. And ultimately, I suppose, sort of widen that net. I mean, certainly, you know, the other day, Pepkor had results and they're selling smartphones and they might not be the fancy Apple or the fancy Samsung, but they're smartphones and they've got that capability for the digital cash, for the fintech.
100%. If you've seen what the regulator is saying around modernization of payments and how they actually see digital as a key enabler from a financial inclusion perspective. So you can clearly see that once we solve the access to this kind of gadget you're talking about, they can enable the technology to be used. It definitely is going to be a key player for us in making sure that we open up the financial inclusion piece, which is a key strategic pillar from a regulatory point of view as well.
I take that. I hadn't thought that much around it actually enabling financial inclusion because, of course, you know, cash is perfect. I've got a crisp 50 Rand note. It's recognized and accepted by anybody. But someone might say, I don't want to take cash for whatever reason. That can then become an exclusion. If I want to move money to a relative or a friend, if I don't have the fintech, I can do it, but at huge cost.
At huge cost. But if you look at it as well, from a consumer, like you said, you have a 50 Rand crisp note. You only have an opportunity to use it once if it's not in a digital form. You have no audit trail of understanding your payments behavior. If you start digitizing these things, even for your own personal finances, you've created an audit trail. You're starting to see where you're spending the money, how you're spending the money, and getting involved in other forms of the economy because you now have a record of how you are using cash or how you're using your money.
Got you on that. And then I want to shift direction slightly. And, you know, one of the things of cash is it's also great for crime. If I want to be committing crimes, I don't want those paper trails. Does digitization sort of reduce that or do criminals just manage to find their way into the fintech space?
We have not looked at more insights around the digital space to see whether that is playing a role more on the criminality side of things. But, you know, all forms of payment comes with pros and cons. With the rise of digital, you're seeing a rise of cybercrime, a rise of all those kinds of things. But if I take it back to cash around the physical risk that we see with enabling cash, making sure that cash is available in all corners of this country, essentially it means that we need to make sure that cash moves at certain times of the month into those corners of the country.
It's also, you talk around security and you talk around the digital. And I take your point. On my desk right now is a cell phone, which has got banking apps and everything. But, you know, I can be compromised in other ways where if we go back to the crisp 50 Rand note, it can't be compromised right now. It's sitting on my wallet to my desk. And that gives a level of security. And I think a lot of folks, and maybe I'm being biased when I say the older generation prefer that sort of comfort of the money in their pocket.
That might be a preference, but if you look at how much it costs to get that crisp note into your wallet, ultimately it drives, like I said, you said it's a big conundrum for banks and retailers. And I said, actually, even the players in the value chain who participate in enabling this cash to move between the retailer to the banks, it just adds to the cost of providing that. And ultimately, the cost to you as the end consumer, if you're going to be going to that retailer to buy anything. It's those invisible costs in my mind that you won't associate directly with holding that 50 rand note in your hand.
Yeah, no, fair point. It can be picked from my pocket. Also, getting that 50 rand note probably cost me money. And if I had to go to an ATM, that isn't free either. At the end of the day, and I mentioned PayShap, there's obviously a lot of other fintech out there as well. Certainly they're rising. Certainly they're great products. But my sense is that cash, and not even just in a South African environment, probably more globally, I mean, cash doesn't go away. Maybe its position changes. Maybe it gets a little less usage, but it remains as a form of currency and a form of transaction.
Cash certainly doesn't go away. However, what we need to be working towards, definitely as a bank and as an industry, is a position where digital and cash coexist, but we've got the sufficient amount of cash in the ecosystem, not at this level at which it's in right now. So we need enough customers using digital and maybe using cash as a BCM or for those transactions that you're referring to where we just need a quick transaction. We have a 50 rand note, not for the massive transactions that we are seeing right now where you're buying your whole groceries using cash. Because essentially that means you need a whole lot of cash inside an ATM to draw, then walk to the retailer. When you leave that cash with that retailer, they're sitting with huge amounts of cash that they need to move somewhere. Otherwise, it's a crime risk for them as well to hold that kind of cash in their premises.
I take your point, because of course it was an issue getting it into the ATM. There's a risk as I'm walking to the retailer. Now the retailer's got that risk, and this ultimately is all adding cost into the process, which needs to be paid somewhere. We'll leave that there. Executive Cash Absa, appreciate the time today.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Do you still use cash? I'm old school, really. I have a 50 rand note in my wallet. In fact, I have 50s and 100s and 20s. It's high I roll. But are you still using it, or perhaps for you it's more about digital? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. When you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the unpredictable ups and downs caused by day-to-day market fluctuations. Because our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Friday thought from me on buying falling shares. So you find a share, you think it offers great value, but it's falling and falling. And this doesn't mean that you're wrong about the valuation. It just means that you're out of sync with the market. The market does not agree with you. So the often response is you buy some and it falls more and you buy more and it just carries on falling. And then eventually one day you start to question your valuation and you bail. And at some point, maybe it does start to go higher. My thought this today is that why not wait for that price action to be positive? In other words, you like the valuation, you like the share, but the action is downwards. Now, you could say, well, this is a great price, and hey, if it falls, I get even more. Yes, but things can fall. They can go way on. And as I said, it's not necessarily because your valuation is wrong. Particularly in small caps, it might just be a large position that's exiting. So learn, get some sort of basic chart techniques and just learn to look at a chart and say, it's falling, I'm going to wait, and wait for that reversal. And it's not a perfect science either. Things will reverse, and then they've head faked you, and they carry on falling down a bit. And you don't need to be a full-on expert chartist, but some basic chart understandings will, in many cases, save you a bunch, get you a price that may or may not be better, but it'll get you a price that is certainly more comfortable and a price that fits with your theory of a good value.
That's it for today. We were chatting with Lawrence Rapp from Fakela yesterday. Around their year-end results, they're seeing good rental reversions, they're increasing dividend up 10.5% this year. We asked if you hold this REIT. It is a niche REIT, make no mistake about that. Almost half of you said, nope, no REITs for you at all. A quarter said, yes, great stock. A fifth, preferring others. The rest were saying it is just too small. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, happy birthday, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and review in your podcatcher of choice. We will chat again Monday. Changes to the Companies Act.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.